Good evening. It is Friday, September 4th, 2020. This is Ozarks at Large. And this is 91.3 KUAF, a listener-supported service of the School of Journalism and Strategic Media at the University of Arkansas. Tonight, we check in with Michael Tilley from Talk Business and Politics. He'll be calling us from his Fort Smith office to review some of the week's news. We check in with Becca Martin Brown of the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette. She'll be in her Bella Vista office, and we'll hear her suggestions for entertainment for the week ahead. And we check in with Jason Sewell to get a preview of the new season beginning tomorrow night of Later with Jason Sewell. Producing a television show with guests during a pandemic is a different kind of exercise. Governor Asa Hutchinson calls today's Arkansas COVID-19 numbers a dramatic exclamation point to finish the week before a three-day holiday weekend. The state set new highs for both new cases diagnosed, 1,094, and test results received, more than 11,200. Washington County again had the most new cases, 215. At today's press briefing in Searcy, the governor announced that 82% of the new cases in Washington County were in people between the ages of 18 and 24. The governor says he talked with University of Arkansas Chancellor Joe Steinmetz this morning.
He understands what he's facing on the campus, and they're taking some very quick action to address that. And they have a very strong protocols in place for testing. They've been testing a large number of students, and some of those, as we can see here in the results. But he is taking some action, and they have announced today, and he shared with me, that they are banning, as a university, banning all gatherings on and off campus of 10 or more. And so this is an admonition to the students that even if you're living off campus, under the student code of conduct, you have to follow the school's rules, and there's consequences for not doing that. And Chancellor Steinmetz emphasized that they would use the student code of conduct to assure compliance and try to obtain compliance by the student.
Additionally, an email today from Charles Robinson, interim provost and vice chancellor for student and academic affairs, indicates on-campus events until September 8th are suspended, other than official events conducted by university academic and administrative units. Classes are not suspended. And the city of Fayetteville is increasing the presence of police officers and fire marshals in the city's entertainment district this Labor Day weekend for the sole purpose of educating and enforcing directives related to the pandemic. In a letter posted on the city's website, Mayor Lionel Jordan writes the city wants to raise awareness of COVID-19 prevention in everyone, but this weekend's efforts are especially designed to reach University of Arkansas students. Fayetteville's police chief, Mike Reynolds, writes in that same letter that many students arrive in Fayetteville from other states and countries and may not yet be aware of local ordinances designed to slow the spread of coronavirus. Also today, the Arkansas Department of Health is reporting a dozen additional deaths in Arkansas from the virus, bringing the state's death total to 873. There are fewer people hospitalized in the state because of coronavirus today, 401. That's down from a pandemic high of more than 500 a few weeks ago. Five counties besides Washington County report more than 20 new cases, including Pulaski County with 87, Benton County with 56, and Sebastian County with 21 new cases. It should be noted that Craighead County, home of Arkansas State University, reports 47 new cases, with 45% of those cases in people between 18 and 24. The governor says he does not expect to enact greater statewide restrictions because of the increase in cases in the past 48 hours.
Because our targeted approach has been very effective, and we want to be able to continue to do that. Whenever you look, again, let's think through in terms of large university campus. Dr. Fauci made the point that the last thing you want to do is to send all of those students home because that really would add to the spread of any virus versus being in an environment that it is something you can put restrictions in, you can help guide the behavior to a greater extent.
Dr. Jose Romero, Arkansas's Secretary of Health, says the reduction in Arkansans hospitalized because of the virus is a good trend, but as new case numbers have increased, there is an expectation of possible higher hospitalization rates in the near future.
We don't have a model for predicting that exactly, but what we can tell you is that when we see and when we have seen increases in cases, we see hospitalizations increase. So it's only expected that in the next 2 weeks we will see more cases hospitalized. Will not shock us and will not take us by surprise.
And while many of the new cases are in younger people over the past few days, who are not as a wide demographic as susceptible to immediate damaging effects as older adults, Dr. Romero says the virus in anybody can be dangerous.
Let me point out, for anybody that is in that age group, we have seen deaths in that age group, in the 18 to 24, both nationally and within our state. So being young and healthy is not a guarantee that you will not develop severe disease or have a fatal outcome. And that is very important to keep in mind. You know, as young individuals, there is a sense of, let's say, invincibility, there is a risk from this infection.
The entire press briefing can be viewed at Governor Asa Hutchinson's YouTube channel. This is Ozarks at Large. With me on the phone from his home office in Fort Smith is Michael Tilley with Talk Business and Politics. Welcome back, Michael.
Thanks. I'm sitting here in the swampland that is my yard.
Rain and humidity this week, right?
Yes. Yeah, it's lovely. Lovely. But look, I'm not complaining. August is relatively cool, which is the way I've said before, us fat boys like it.
Well, let's talk about some new jobless performance numbers that were posted yesterday at talkbusiness.net. What do they tell us?
Well, they tell us it's good news. So if you're looking for a little bit of a bright spot in the jobs and the economy picture, this is kind of it. It reaffirms what we saw in the statewide jobless report, that those significant job losses that we saw back in March and April, we're starting to recover from that. The state still has around 100,000, this according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics data. The state still has about 100,000 fewer people employed than it did this time last year, but that's improving. Now, the Metro jobs data shows that all of the metro areas interconnected to the state, with the exception of one, which is Memphis, West Memphis, had an improvement, or if not a significant improvement, in the jobless rate. For example, Northwest Arkansas, jobless rate improved from 6.4% in June to 5.7% in July. Fort Smith improved, it was a slight improvement in Fort Smith from 7.4% in June to 7.2% in July. Of course, when you look back at July 2019, for example, the Northwest Arkansas jobless rate was 3% compared to the 5.7% now. So it's still... it's still not pretty, but it's not as ugly as it was. One interesting thing, and I'll move on from this, is that these metro numbers still tell us that of the in-state metro regions, for example, we have two that are, we have Texarkana and the Memphis, West Memphis, that are connected to other states. And I guess to some extent Fort Smith is,
sure,
but most of it's in Arkansas. But of Central Arkansas, Fort Smith, and Northwest Arkansas, those three regions combined for 61.1% of all the job losses in the state during July. Mm. I think that gives you an idea of how urban the jobs are. We've written a Talk Business before, even editorialized on it, about the growing divide between jobs in rural and metro areas. And this provides a very clear example.
Tourism has taken, understandably, a hit during the pandemic. What had been a run of record-setting years for tourism in Arkansas is likely going to be broken.
Broken is a nice term for it. It definitely hit a wall. The state's 2% tourism tax is down 30.4% between January and June. That had been setting records every year. Set another record in 2019. The January through June hospitality tax collections in the 17 cities we surveyed for the tourism sector fell almost 22%. The tourism industry jobs. We talked to Montine McNulty. She's the CEO of Arkansas Hospitality Association. She says that the losses, those hospitality tax collections in those cities went deeper, but the quick service restaurant, franchise restaurants, you know, McDonald's, Starbucks, all of that,
right,
kind of kept it going. She says it's those, quote, independent homegrown restaurants that are closing and are at most risk. And she says it's going to take what she calls swift help from state and federal governments to make sure that they survive, that we don't come out of this pandemic. And the only place you can go to is, you know, McDonald's or Applebee's.
Right. This is so important because this is such had been such a growing part of Arkansas's economy. So to take a more than 30% drop, those ripples will go far and wide in Arkansas.
Yeah, and I think if you look even further downstream, you look at who's employed by this industry, that's not the most secure employment mm-hmm. out there. If a manufacturing operation or a large insurance company or some major corporation has to furlough or lay off people, it's likely that there are some severance or some benefits or something along with that.
Right.
You lose a job at a restaurant or, you know, at Bob's Kayak Service or whatever, you're probably on your own. Mm. And so that's kind of a double whammy. I've talked to some other economists, and no one is optimistic about this improving until there is a proven vaccine, not a political vaccine, but right. a proven vaccine and good therapeutics, not just a vaccine, but good therapeutics to better treat those who continue to be infected. So, and this is, look, as you said, it was the state's second largest industry behind agriculture, and it's just taking a hit.
All right, let's move on. Golf is an outdoor game. I didn't realize that a problem with a roof could be a roadblock to buying a golf club, a country club, but that's what's developed with Fiana Hills?
Yes, Fiana Hills Golf Club, Fiana Hills Country Club and the golf course, it's been closed since December 31st, 2018. The owner, David Millay, closed it. And we reported a couple months ago, I think it was, that there's a local investor group trying to buy it. But those, as you said, those negotiations have hit a wall during the course of the due diligence. I talked to Pete Charlton. He's leading this group of residents, about 60, he says. And during due diligence, they found that several issues. So the roof isn't just it, but it's a big part of it, that during some previous hailstorms that the damage was repaired by, what he said, just some storm chaser who didn't know what they're doing. And so it's going to take anywhere from $300,000 to $400,000 to go in and fix the roof. They had offered, they had a kind of an offer and acceptance with Millay to sell, to buy the club, I should say, for $1.1 million. But then if you have to turn back around and you discover that, you know, you've got several hundred thousand dollars to put in the roof, and then there were some other things. So they went back to David Millay and wanted a little more time. They were supposed to close on September 15th. They wanted a little more time to figure out what they wanted to do. Long story short, Millay really was not interested in extending that closing date without a significant non-refundable deposit, about $100,000. So that original offer to buy the club has been removed and pulled back. So there's no offer to buy the club. It's technically, as Pete Charlton said, it's technically dead as a doornail. Mm. But they're continuing to meet. I think Pete said there are some among the group who said, let's keep pushing. Let's see if we can't find some way to negotiate out of this. The bottom line, Kyle, is a lot of people want the club to open again. There are roughly 178 homes that immediately surround the course, but there are several hundred more that are near it. And also, they all have some property value interest in that being an active club and golf course. So there are some meetings this week. I don't know if Pete, Mr. Charlton will talk to me about what those meetings decided to do from those meetings. So we'll see. Hopefully I'll have some follow-up reporting on this next week.
All right. And finally, as you surmised, the outdoor entertainment districts in Fort Smith are now permanent, not just temporary.
Yes. So, yeah, you bring some of that Ozark lager down, and we can just walk and drink at the same time.
No. You can't bring your own. You got to go into
I know it. That's true. But, yeah, so there are entertainment districts, permanent entertainment districts in downtown Fort Smith and in a certain area at Chaffee Crossing, not the whole area, but a small area. And so, and also in downtown Fort Smith, there's what's called a temporary entertainment district. It's larger than the permanent district. That allows for like the Steel Horse Rally. So you could have a temporary entertainment district built around an event. So this is interesting. There's been a lot of people pushing this since the state law was changed in early 2019. Again, as we said, if we can get COVID behind us, I suspect Fort Smith and a lot of the other cities that have these kind of districts will see a lot more use of them. Look, I remember 1,000 years ago when I was in the Navy in downtown Chicago, they would just block off whole districts and you could just walk from bar to bar with a cup and everybody, you know, gave themselves and it was a great atmosphere and hopefully that can kind of be recreated in downtown Fort Smith.
Yes, but fortunately we don't have Lake Michigan in Januarys like they do in Chicago. I can't imagine walking around outside.
Well, I'll tell you how smart I am. I showed up for boot camp in Great Lake, Chicago in January. So don't do that. If anybody's thinking about joining the Navy, don't do it in January.
Noted. Michael Tilley is with Talk Business and Politics. You can read about all of this except for the advice of how not to join the Navy or when not to join the Navy. Right. Everything else.
Yeah, when not. Yeah.
It's at talkbusiness.net. Hey, Michael, have a happy Labor Day. We'll talk to you next Friday.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Support comes from Butterfield Trail Village, Northwest Arkansas's retirement community catering to active lifestyles and resident well-being, offering a variety of activities, living options, plus outdoor spaces, including access to city trails. ButterfieldTrailVillage.org for more.
This is Ozarks at Large. Most of us have grown accustomed to wearing masks 7 months into a global COVID-19 pandemic. But for people who are deaf and hearing impaired who rely on lip reading to communicate, these masks are disrupting their lives. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich has this report.
Eureka Springs native Tillian Jones lives in Syracuse, New York, where he works as a mechanical engineer designing and building electrical motor prototypes for recreational and alternative energy applications. Jones, who's 27, says his parents first realized their son had a hearing impairment thanks to a flock of chickens.
We had baby chicks, like baby chickens, and, you know, play with them. And one day I asked my mom, well, where are they? Well, apparently they were standing right next to my feet screaming bloody murder. And my parents were like, you should be hearing that, but you're not.
Jones says he can't hear certain pitches.
My whole hearing is like dampened, except in the high pitch are pretty much gone. But with hearing aids, I can hear pretty well, I think, I assume. But but of course, lip reading does tremendous help for me.
Lip reading, or speech reading, is a visual technique used by the deaf and hard of hearing to interpret spoken language. But Jones says his ability to lip read is now greatly impaired because of the COVID-19 pandemic.
I wear a mask all the time, anytime I go out. My colleague, for the most part, wears masks everywhere, but not everyone, unfortunately. Of course, I would like everyone to wear masks to be safe. But then again, of course, it's a hindrance to me to understand people.
Speech reading is a key to his life, he says.
Once masks were put up, as if I lost subtitles to the world.
Masks also muffle speech, making conversation difficult, even for hearing people. Joy Hapeman, a consumer loans sales manager at Arvest Bank for nearly 16 years, says she began losing her hearing in her early 20s. She was recently diagnosed as profoundly deaf.
Actually, I'm going to say this right. Sensorineural hearing loss. So it's nerve damage.
The cause is unknown, she says. After conventional hearing aids failed, she decided to have a cochlear implant, a neuroprosthetic device which deploys electrical signals that directly stimulate the auditory nerve. It requires major surgery, which she had a year ago, April.
Getting the cochlear implant has been life-changing. Going from I can't, listen and take part in a meeting or a discussion. I could not handle that. I now can lead discussions and give my feedback freely and not have to wonder, what are they talking about?
But since a global pandemic was declared, she says her hearing is once again impeded.
Everybody in the world now wearing a mask. I did not realize how much I speech read. That if I can't see somebody, I could not even think of having a conversation with them. Masks have been a humongous struggle in a lot of ways, even though I have my cochlear implant.
Hapeman says masks also disrupt sign language, which she's learning.
I have been taking an American Sign Language class through the sources here in Fayetteville. And it is amazing how much body language, how much facial expression goes into their communication with sign language that, I can still do the hands, but if they cannot see the face, it is a huge struggle and it's going to be a huge problem for any communication for deaf and hard of hearing people.
Rachel Glade is Program Director of Communication Sciences and Disorders at the University of Arkansas. She developed an interest in working with individuals with hearing impairments while working as a graduate assistant at Arkansas Children's Hospital.
In their audiology and speech pathology program there in Little Rock. And that, I was exposed to a fantastic work group there that were working with, babies as young as 3 months that had been newly identified with hearing loss, and then adults that were, 90 plus getting cochlear implants. And so it was motivating and inspiring to see the work of that group. And so thankfully I had the opportunity to continue that in Northwest Arkansas.
As a speech language pathologist, Glade quickly realized how masks are hindering her clients.
All of those nonverbal cues that you get from a face, smiles and frowns, and there's so much communication that happens even without a word being spoken. And then if we're covering half of our face, we're missing all of those cues, right? And so, kids that are in school districts are, think about the little ones that are just learning how to identify emotions or learning how to read and trying to figure out, okay, well, I need to put my lips together to make a B sound, make that B sound. Well, they're not getting those visual cues now. And then on the adult side, that mask impedes the sound, period. Like it is a barrier.
Research on pandemic mask wearing published this summer in the American Academy of Audiology by Samuel Atchison, a professor of audiology at the University of Arkansas for Medical Sciences, she says, revealed troubling data.
Some of the masks can cause up to a 20 decibel drop in hearing. And if you have a mask on plus a face shield, which is what many, there are a lot of people in school districts and a lot of professionals are doing now, which is certainly safe and recommended by the CDC, but that could cause up to a 30 decibel drop. So what that means is somebody that maybe initially had a mild hearing loss, that's going to drop them down to that moderate, possibly even severe range just like that, just for wearing a mask.
Glade also serves as president of the Arkansas Speech Language Hearing Association and serves on the board for Arkansas Hands and Voices, both organizations which advocate for wearing clear masks or at least masks with clear windows. Glade demonstrates how a windowed mask works.
But that's it. But you can already hear, just right now, just you and I talking, the sound signal is so much worse like this. I'm going to take this off now just because I want the speech sound to be better. But there are some masks that have bigger windows than others. Some of them have really small windows in them, which I'm not sure how helpful that is if you can't. You really need a pretty large area. And I'm not saying that, just because I have a big mouth or something. I'm saying you need a large area because the mouth moves a lot. And we need access to all of those cues for communication.
Transparent masks can preserve nonverbal communication cues as well, she says. Atchison writes that widespread use of conventional masks has been little researched and raises questions about speech exaggeration, impeded enunciation, cognitive effort, and fatigue among the general population. In his article, Atchison also says demand for clear masks far exceeds supply in the United States. He and his research team do recommend a commercially available product, if you can find it, branded the Communicator by Safe and Clear, an FDA-registered surgical mask. In an email for this report, Jeff Prale, spokesperson for the Arkansas Association for the Deaf, says he's pressing the Arkansas legislature to enact a law requiring all essential workers to wear clear face masks to accommodate the deaf and hearing impaired. He suggests when encountering a deaf or hard of hearing person to lower your mask while physically distancing to clearly communicate, or use a smartphone to text or paper and pencil to message. Tillian Jones, however, is taking things in stride. He says for now, masks pose a temporary nuisance.
Honestly, it's kind of hard because you want to stay safe as always. And just maybe a year of misunderstanding and mild frustration, not understanding the other person, I think I can live with it. But once the mask comes down, I'll be very happy.
Because this pandemic, he says, will eventually end. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
You can see an array of masks to accommodate those with hearing impairment, as well as photos of Joy Hateman and Tillian Jones on our news link. That's at ozarksatlarge.com. This is Ozarks at Large. Tomorrow night, Jason Sewell begins the eighth season of Later with Jason Sewell, his variety and comedy show that airs at 9:30 on Fox 24. This week, we reach Jason via Zoom, a medium he's familiar with since his shows are being produced with big assists from Zoom. Tomorrow night's show is, even in a pandemic, the first of more than 30 new shows for the season.
We give ourselves the mission of finding fresh content for 32 shows, 32 different personalities in Northwest Arkansas to interview, music videos to put together, creative kind of sketch comedy series to come up with, culinary, talking to chefs. So that's our, you know, that's what we love to do. And we've already filmed quite a few episodes for this season and we're excited about it.
All right. And filmed, I mean, obviously you're not together with the guests. The guests are by Zoom.
Yeah. So it's been, you know, my shout out to the folks at Fable Public Television who produced the show, but we had to, you know, pivot like so many, like yourself as well, find a way to continue to create our product by, you know, doing it virtually. So even for the last quarter, I would say, of season 7, we have all been at home. We have been virtually meeting and chatting with guests. And the framework looks a little different, but the feel is the same. It's the same show that you come to love and know, just in a bit of a different format.
Have you found that there's anything easier? I mean, scheduling might be easier because it used to be you had to have all the guests and all the tech people in one room at one time. Now you can kind of sparse that out.
Yeah, that's a great point. You know, it has been, it has its pros and cons, right? So obviously you're not in the same room. You're kind of not picking up on everybody's physical cues. You can't read the room, which is something that I love to do. You know, you can tell when somebody's kind of, they're done with that question or they want to move on or whatever. I love that aspect. And some of that only comes by being in the same room with people. But on the other hand, it's so convenient for us. When we first started, we didn't know what this was going to be. I don't think anybody did. Everybody doing Zoom meetings now, no one knew what Zoom was like. We didn't even know what Zoom was. So now we're accustomed to it. And I just go, you know, into a different room. I've set up kind of a little studio in my house and we have developed a routine. It's much less pressure. Our guests are also, one of the things I've really noticed is that our guests are relaxed in a way that they're not when they have a giant camera pointed at their face sometimes, you know? So just looking at your computer screen and talking to someone, there's just a real sense of an organic conversation can happen rather than something that kind of feels staged or that they have answers that are prepped. This feels just like a natural conversation you would have with somebody.
So you mentioned you've already got several that you've filmed or taped or whatever term we would use in 2020. Tell us a little bit about who you've talked to and what we'll see.
Yeah, so the Idle Class magazine is one of my favorite, you know, publications here in Northwest Arkansas. And, you know, they, I feel like their heartbeat is very similar to what we do on the show, as is Ozarks at Large, as is my other show, Good Day in WA, where we're focused on the region. So we're talking to the Idle Class magazine, kind of about these same things. How do you publish a magazine in during a pandemic? How do you get that photography going? Are your photographs, you know, are they stock footage? What do you use it? You know, so we talked to Julia Trupp there with the magazine about everything that they have going on. Another thing that we've done, you know, music videos have always been a big part of our show. It's funny because music videos hardly are a thing anymore. You know, when I was growing up, we watched music videos and we learned about the bands that way. And now that doesn't really happen on mainstream television. So one of the things we thought early on that was great for us was to feature some local music acts through a music video series. And we partnered with a bunch of different local recording studios to kind of put those together in our show. But we have a great working relationship right now with Darren Crisp at Crisp Recording Studios in Fayetteville. And he has been supplying us with just some really stellar content for our music video segments. And then we have some of our favorite like chefs coming back on. Chef Case DeGario, he's been a regular on our show since the very early days. So he's gonna lead off. He's usually been our first chef that we have on the first episode. So he's coming by to hang out with us. So kind of like all of that stuff, it feels routine, but it's also done so differently now that we are on Zoom. And something that we're really excited about, and I'll go ahead and put this out there, we haven't quite put the finishing touches on it yet, but we are doing an animated series, a series of animated shorts. Now, for listeners who may watch the show and tune in, you might remember that we did this a couple years ago with The Art of Gustav Karlsson. We rolled out kind of a limited 3-episode series. And so we are expanding our animated content, I suppose, with the art of Chad Maupin at Big Bot Design. And then we have engaged local actors. So we have a cast of about 8 local actors that we are using their voices. And we've got a couple of local composers who are creating the soundscape for this thing. So it's kind of like a, you know, it's a, I'm a big sci-fi guy. So it's a space tale, right? So the kind of imagine a heist. They're out, this group of aliens, I suppose, for lack of a better word, are out to get something that's super valuable to them. And we're going to kind of see how that plays out over 8 episodes in this season. So, you know, to answer your question, yes, we've got a lot of stuff that we've already done, but we have a lot of stuff that we're looking forward to doing and kind of putting the finishing touches on for this season.
Humor is a big part of the show. You're a funny person.
Funny looking.
Is it harder to know if something is landing if you are only person in the studio? I mean, in other times you've got the sidekick, you've got the camera people, but if it's just you in the room.
It's hard. Yeah, you mentioned, so, you know, Beau Counts, my co-host, and I, we oftentimes will find things funny that we're talking about, and we'll ramble about it for a while. And something that you might not know when you see the show on TV is that our producer is also on the Zoom call. You can't see him, Dan Robinson, but he's there. And we will go on for a while, and Dan has muted himself and has muted his camera, and he'll finally come on and just say, guys, this isn't working, you know? We think it's the most hilarious thing ever, whatever the joke is. So, you know, then we have to take 2. And you're so right, because it's easy to see what you're doing when you can have that physical reaction. But when you're just talking either to just yourself or to one other person, and they're just doing, you know, being nice by laughing along with you. But if it's really not funny, then you need to move on and find something else. So that's one of the great reasons why we like that the show isn't live. It's pretty close. We film our episodes pretty close to when they air, but without it being live, you can have a chance to say, you know what? that wasn't as funny as you thought it was. Let's try it again.
Jason Sewell is the host of Later with Jason Sewell. The eighth season begins tomorrow night at 9:30 on Fox 24. Every new episode airs after the local newscast each Saturday night on that channel, even if a sports broadcast pushes back the start. You can also find the show on Facebook and Instagram, and all of the previous seven seasons can be found on YouTube. Jason spoke with us earlier this week via Zoom. After several years of comprehensive planning, the Buffalo National River is in the final stages of drying up visitor service improvements for the Boxley Valley area. The public park section encompasses the Upper Buffalo River, Steel Creek, and Ponca Wilderness area. Casey Brandstetter, Branch Chief of Interpretation, is Public Information Officer for the Buffalo National River.
We see high visitation in the Boxley Valley area in the spring and in the fall. And in the spring, that high visitation is for floating this upper river section of Buffalo National River. That's whenever you see an increase of flow and water. And that water does tend to go away and dry up in the middle of the summer and late summer. But then come fall is whenever it's a great time to see the elk in this part of the park.
But especially during spring and fall, visitors overcrowd Boxley Valley, which is also a historic residential district. In late summer 2016, the Park Service initiated two public listening sessions to gather feedback to better accommodate tourist flow. Draft plans were later developed, and following an environmental assessment, the National Park Service recently issued a finding of no significant impact, approving the plans.
So one of the things that we are aiming to move forward into is working on the congestion and crowding at the river access points in the Boxley Valley. So at Steel Creek and at Ponca, oftentimes you will find large crowds that make that staging area difficult to navigate. We want to alleviate those congestion problems in that space by working on parking areas, by working on a better flow of traffic through that area. As you mentioned, our elk viewing is extremely popular in this part of the park, and increasing the accessibility to that elk viewing by limiting the number of traffic jams that occur currently on the state highway is another goal that we would like to move forward. This could be accomplished with increasing the designated pull-off locations on the roadside to make sure that our neighboring private landowners and other motor vehicle traffic on that state highway aren't impeded.
Improving park interpretation, educational services, and creating accessible routes to newly restored historic structures are also planned.
We have very limited visitor services and opportunities for education and interpretation in the Boxley Valley area. We don't have a visitor center within this space, a formal location for visitors to interact with park rangers and get orientation information, to get information on the many historical aspects of Boxley Valley. And so creating a location for those interactions will be important too.
The next phase is securing funding through key partnerships, Brandstetter says, including Arkansas Game and Fish Commission, which helps manage wild elk herds in the park. The public can read the entire planning document, including public comments and stakeholder involvement, at nps.gov/buff. We've also posted that link at ozarksatlarge.com.
When you want to hear important, insightful, and intelligent reporting, you turn to KUAF. When you want to dive into an important issue, you turn to KUAF. And when you want intelligent conversation about a complicated issue, you turn to KUAF. This fall, KUAF is turning to you. We're raising money during the month of September to keep all of the important programs you rely on every day on the air. Our contributing listeners provide more than 75% of our funding. You can be a part of our fall fundraiser and make a difference to your public radio station. Give now at supportkuaf.com.
This is Ozarks at Large. With me on the phone from her office in Bella Vista is Becca Martin Brown, who is the features editor at the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette. Happy Friday, Becca.
And I'm actually in my office, the one the newspaper provides for me, which has been an interesting experience all week. It's nice and peaceful here.
I bet.
So it's not going to be nice and peaceful in Fayetteville week this weekend, though, it's going to be loud.
Because?
I assume they're loud. Warbird weekend.
Right.
The great big airplanes coming in to the Arkansas Air and Military Museum. They're bringing in a B-17 Flying Fortress and a B-29 Super Fortress.
And they're big.
Both of which come from the 1940s. Okay, the B-17 has a 104-foot wingspan, which is over a third of a football field.
Right.
The B-29 is 141 feet, which is half a football field. One may, if one has money, fly in them.
Do we know how much that costs?
We do. It's like $600.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But one may go to the Arkansas Air and Military Museum and see them from 8 to 6 tomorrow, Sunday, and Monday. It's $25 for a family to get in, $15 for adults, and $10 for children 12 and younger. So there's your weekend plan. Or if you'd prefer something slightly quieter, the North Forest Lights are back at Crystal Bridges.
That is quieter, yes.
Yeah, you think? I did not see them when they were here before. Have you?
Yes, I went a couple of times, and it was quite amazing.
The North Forest Lights are going to be here all winter.
All winter?
They're going to be here until April 4th. So you can find out more at crystalbridges.org. The cost is $7 to $15 for members, $10 to $22 for the public. There is an increase of $5 for day of purchases.
Mm.
So you want to go online and make your plan. If you don't want to leave the house, the Rogers Historical Museum has a new exhibit about influential women who helped win the vote. It was supposed to be in the museum's travel gallery, but they've decided to go online with it, which is cool because it gives everybody access. And you can learn more about all this at rogershistoricalmuseum.org. You can also buy a book online that I don't think will be a celebrity tell-all, but it is written by the wife of a celebrity.
Okay.
Who's kind of a celebrity herself. Peggy Hill, who is John Tumahawk's wife.
Yes.
Lakota Sioux flutist from Eureka Springs, is finally getting to have her say. She's been supporting him as a musician for 27 years, and now he's supporting her as a writer. She's already the author of The Wind of My Soul, which is a collection of poetry and art and journaling, but she's just released Give Peas a Chance. It's literally the recipes and the wisdom that she got in her mom's kitchen. It is $18 at the letter B, becompassionate.com. On Monday, the Shiloh Museum of Ozark History opens its doors again.
Oh, they're going to let people in. I'm sure it's going to have all kinds of precautions and protocol.
They will, and they've removed the exhibits that were, remember, museums for the last several years, decade or more, have been trying to move into touchable interactive exhibits. Ding,
right.
Ding, ding. Nope.
Not now.
They are operating 10 to 5 Monday through Friday.
Okay.
Closing for the weekend.
Okay.
And then on Thursday mornings from 10 to noon, that's high-risk visitors only.
Okay.
Read Sunday's What's Up. And since I've been here at the office where the dogs aren't interrupting me every 5 minutes, I think my story's even in English.
Well, we'll find out Sunday, won't we?
Yes, we will.
All right. Becca Martin Brown, features editor at the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette. Becca, thanks so much.
Thank you. We'll see you next week. Well, we'll talk to you.
There you go.
When caring for a seriously ill loved one, the journey shouldn't be taken alone. Circle of Life Hospice can help. Services are covered by Medicare, Medicaid, and private insurance. No one is turned away based on an inability to pay. 750-6632 or nwacircleoflife.com for more.
This is Ozarks at Large. For the past several years, we've spent the Friday before Labor Day preparing a holiday Ozarks at Large that would include musical performances recorded at the Fayetteville Public Library during the just completed Fayetteville Roots Festival. These Labor Day Ozarks at Large editions would include shows that took place at the library on Saturday and Sunday that were not part of our annual Friday Live Ozarks at Large Roots Festival collaborations. Well, this year, that Friday Live show and the extra performances on Saturday and Sunday mornings all postponed because of the pandemic. But we're going to feature some of our favorite past performances that were part of collaborations with the Fayetteville Public Library and the Fayetteville Roots Festival, Ozarks at Large, and KUAF. We're going to feature those performances on Sunday's weekend Ozarks at Large and on our Monday daily show. We're going to hear Iris Dement from 2013, Pokey LaFarge from 2016, and much more. Plus, on the Monday show, a little help from our friends, some of our favorite recent contributions from Randy Dixon at the David and Barbara Pryor Center for Arkansas Oral and Visual History. Raven Cook, founder and president of Black History Educational Programming, who provides us reflections in Black each week, and Leah Uribe with Sound Perimeter. Great music, great people, great memories on Weekend Ozarks at Large, Sunday morning at 9, and on our daily edition of Ozarks at Large, Monday at noon and 7 p.m. here on 91.3 KUAF, your public radio station.
Hello, my name is Rhonda Dillard. Did you know that KUAF listeners could become your best customers? KUAF listeners find value in public radio, and research shows that 85% of public radio listeners are more likely to support a business or service that they heard about on public radio. So if you enjoy listening to KUAF, why not invite your fellow listeners to become your customers? Email Rhonda at KUAF.com to receive more information.
And this is 91.3 KUAF, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Rogers, and Poteau, Oklahoma. 91.3 KUAF is a listener-supported service of the J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. Contributors to this Friday evening edition of our show included Jacqueline Froelich. Jacqueline also provided the sound and information about the Boxley Valley Plan. Timothy Dennis produced our show from his home studio in downtown Fayetteville. Our thanks to Michael Tilley from Talk Business and Politics for his help tonight. Also, thank you, Becca Martin Brown, features editor with the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette, for your Friday help. Our theme is titled The First Hurrah. It is written and performed by Daryl Sean. You can find out more about Daryl at his Facebook and Instagram feeds. You can also find his most recent CD, Safe in Sound, wherever you look for music online. Thanks so much for being with us tonight, and thanks to everyone who has donated PPE during the past week or so to KUAF. We put up the Giving Tree a few months early. We have begun distributing some of that PPE to area schools and teachers. That drive continues here at 9 South School in downtown Fayetteville through the month of September. Again, thanks to everyone who has contributed so far. We'll be back with you 9 o'clock Sunday morning for the next edition of Weekend Ozarks at Large. We have a Labor Day edition of our program Monday at noon and 7. Both Sunday and Monday, we will be hearing some of our favorite songs. Some, not all, don't have room for all that. Some of our favorite songs from past Roots Festival performances with Ozarks at Large over the last several years. From the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio at the Carver Center for Public Radio, I'm Kyle Kellums. Get some rest, be well, talk to you again soon.